Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Tulsa's Booker T. Washington High School celebrated its 100th anniversary last year and wanted to commemorate the event with a film. But as documentary filmmaker Andrea Job soon learned, the story of the 100th anniversary of this particular school was less a polite celebratory event, but an opportunity to tell a true American story of how a school and the people of it overcame prejudice, survived, and thrived, and today provides an education known around the country, yet still nurtures the community around it. Andrea Job's film is titled Freedom School. The film receives its official premiere with a fundraising event this evening at the Circle Cinema. Events get underway at 6 o'clock with a showing set for 6:30. Andrea Job was a choreographer, then a director of live stage production before making the jump into screenwriting and directing. She, along with her producer, cinematographer husband, Robert Job, are Pivot Films. The recent work includes web release short documentaries, and past work include narrative, children's programming, commercials, and 3D animation. And while she was making this particular documentary, she was teaching a documentary film class at the high school, giving students hands-on opportunity to work on the film. Andrea Job is my guest today. Andrea Job, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on this film, Freedom School. How did you get involved with Booker T. Washington? The school has just celebrated its centennial, and I guess this film is to commemorate that centennial. How did your involvement with the school begin?
I had a niece and nephew at Booker T. A couple years ago, and my sister had called me to help with the application for the Race to the Top initiative that the White House had released, and the prize would be to have the president speak at your graduation. And so she said, if you help us with the video and we win, I'll make sure you have a ticket to the graduation. They did not win. Another Booker T. Washington, I believe it was in Memphis, won. But that sort of put me on the radar for a film foundation that was in process of finding a director for a commemorative film for the 100th year.
Now, this turned into quite a documentary. Was it originally designed to be a documentary, or was it going to be more of a celebratory film?
Julia Carlack, who's the producer of this film, had for a couple years been trying to get something to move forward in a film form, a shorter version, a 10-minute film about the school, the accolades, to celebrate it. And after I came on as director and started peeling back layers of history, we had conversation about what if it were longer? What if it encompassed more than the specific items that she really wanted in there? And we found this great story. It could have been even longer than what it is now. So it started small and just continued to mushroom.
And from a celebratory film, it became a documentary too.
We found an American story. Booker T. Washington High School is the main character, but I do remember a student last year asking me, why would anyone want to see a film about my high school? Don't they have a high school? They were thinking of it in terms of just about a high school and what goes on in a high school. And this particular student had no idea of the history, even though they walked in and out of the E.W. Woods Auditorium every day. They weren't familiar with who E.W. Woods was and what he did and how the DNA he started 100 years ago still weaves through the school today.
Why don't we hear a clip that's sort of from the film that talks about E.W. Woods coming to Tulsa. Here's a short clip, audio clip from Freedom School, which will premiere tonight at the Circle Cinema. I guess the band's going to be, you know, the whole schmear's going to be there.
The jazz ensemble will be in the lobby, the pom-pom. It's going to be fun.
All right, well, here's a clip from Andrea Job's film, Freedom School.
E.W. Woods left home with a dime in his pocket.
Born in Mississippi, sharecropper parents, but somehow he got a college education and he was in Tennessee looking for work.
And just happened to see this flyer that said there were jobs available for colored teachers in Oklahoma. That's all he needed. He set out on foot, hitchhiking, riding the boxcars.
He more or less walked the whole way from Tennessee.
Till he got to Oklahoma, where he lived the first night. In a barn, he opened the new Booker T. Washington High School September of 1913.
That is a short clip from the new film, a documentary film about Booker T. Washington High School, Freedom School. The school celebrated its 100th anniversary officially this past year, and I guess the film has been in the process of being made. So as a filmmaker, you come in, you have this very tenuous connection with the school. How did you go about learning about the school?
The producers, Julie Carlack, and then our associate producer, Kathy Henry, we had talked early on about what if the students were involved with the making of the film. And I loved that idea. I love students. I was a student. You kind of feel like you always are when you're a documentary filmmaker. You're always learning. So I began to teach a documentary film class at Booker T. And I had that first year, the pilot year. It was a small group, which I loved. And after class one day, because we had a syllabus that we were following, we went to the historical building that's on the Booker T campus. I had them give me a tour of it. Well, they really didn't know a lot about their own history. And I found this plaque that had an old picture, and it was E.W. Woods, and then it had this brief history. And it talked about him walking from Tennessee to Oklahoma because he had heard they were hiring black teachers in Oklahoma. So I didn't say anything about that I had seen. We went back to class, and I just sort of mind them for what they saw, what they learned, what they didn't know. Then I asked them, who is E.W. Woods? And again, they all just had sort of this tiny shadow of a, I think he's this or that. And I said to myself, we've got to start at the beginning, because this man had, especially for that time period, such a commitment and such a singular vision of what he wanted to accomplish. And it has pushed through this last 100 years. And so that's what I began to see, was not only was it this school, it was this school as it wove in and out of American history and the ideas of race and obstacles that faced, you know, blacks early on and then later on education. So What I saw was an opportunity to connect this school in Tulsa, Oklahoma, with the larger picture of what we were experiencing as a nation, and still are today.
And really, E.W. Woods is the central figure of this, because he articulated a vision which it took a long time for people to understand. He was principal there for 38 years.
In an era that wasn't supportive of this kind of thing, he was faced on all sides with opposition.
And he was saying, you were good as 90% of the people out there, and you're better than the other 10%. And I, you know, I've had John Hope Franklin on the show many times, several times. He's always talked about how E.W. Woods was a central figure in his development as a young man. And of course, there's a whole community of people who were touched by him. And I guess the challenge was to find these people to tell their stories.
I was fortunate enough to meet Mr. and Mrs. Dunn. And Mr. Dunn, who is featured in the film, as is his wife, he was the last graduating class of E.W. Woods as a principal. And I felt like I was touching history, because he knew him and he had so many wonderful things to say, and how this figure, who was a principal, set the tone for their lives, really. And the tightness of the community was something to really marvel at. Booker T, yes, it was a school, but it was an idea. It was a galvanizing force in a community that, as you know, the race riot in 1921, it was a bastion of hope right there in the middle. It was used as the
headquarters. Well, I learned quite a bit in this film. I didn't realize that Booker T. Washington High School was probably one of the only surviving structures in Greenwood area, and it became the Red Cross Refugee Center. I think it actually served as a hospital for a short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Has so many thematic impact on me as a filmmaker, to think a school was a place where you went to get care and help to rebuild your future. And it's just a powerful story, and it's a Tulsa history. It's shared by all of us if you're from here. And I felt very welcomed by everyone I interviewed.
I'm sure people are glad that you're telling this story, because this is a great story that most people are pretty unaware of.
I think different pockets are aware of different pieces, and we were hoping to bring together some of these pieces. And as I mentioned, the amount of stories that I have heard is just breathtaking, but we wanted to just kind of make a through line of the last 100 years of a man who not just affected his community, but 100 years of communities. And I'm one of those people now through my niece and nephew. And who knows, maybe my kids will end up there. We don't know. Uh-huh. But it was truly a gift as a filmmaker.
Well, what I was really, one technique that you used was to show how E.W. Woods built up the Washington faculty, in which he began by educating these kids. He took the most promising, helped them find a way to get to college. He'd send them off to college to help from the community or help
sometimes
from other
even
people.
Himself.
Mm-hmm. And then he would send them a telegram, say, it's time to come back and teach. And you have these great through lines where you see generation after generation after generation that have affected that school, which probably, given American mobility, that's sort of unusual, and it's a testament to the school, why people are so passionate about it.
Absolutely.
Especially in the African-American
and
community.
And I would like to highlight this student that we used to play the E.W. Woods role as he's walking. He was a student in the film class, and that is his dream, is to, he's in college now, and come back, and I believe it's teach English, but that's his dream, is to come back and do that. So he's kind of living the E.W. Woods dream 100 years on. It's very powerful.
Of course, the school had its share of difficulties. It was always the last to get books. It was always the last to get equipment. They had the hijink show, which I assume still continues this day.
It does.
They had to hire out the old Brady Theater because there was no auditorium. There was no basketball court to hold
big
people.
Enough to hold the crowds that would come.
Yeah, it took forever to get a football field. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just amazing. But that didn't daunt any of these people. They just kept on trying to make sure that things got a little better every day.
The way it flourished in the face of difficulty, it just speaks, I think, to the human spirit. It's almost beyond being black or white or green or purple. It's this commitment to excellence in education, whether that was academics or sports or fine arts. And again, it still goes on today. That's what I find so fascinating. It wasn't this isolated period of time. It is the enduring quality of that school, no matter who you talk to. If you talk to the principal today, you feel like you're talking to E.W. Woods. And he kind of looks like him, I have to admit.
Well, you tell the story of how Booker T. Washington continued to thrive during segregation, but what I didn't realize was when desegregation finally came to Tulsa, which would have been 16, 17 years after Brown versus Board of Education, there was a real threat that Washington was going to close.
That's what everyone was doing across the country. They were closing all black schools and then starting to bust them out. And so Tulsa was just kind of falling into that same pattern.
And yet the community literally rebelled.
Absolutely. I'm so proud that there were people on both sides of the Tulsa line that said this has to be different. And even Oklahoma City had a negative experience with integration. And that had happened shortly before Tulsa was ordered to implement Brown versus Board of Education, but there were people on both sides of the community that came together, and I know it wasn't easy, but I think when it's all said and done, there was a lot to be proud of with how they took a situation that could have gone in a very different way. And some of those people I was able to meet, and honestly, I was starstruck because you research all this history and, they had no idea that someday there would be a movie about them, or they were just doing the next right thing in front of them. And I really admired that.
I'm going to talk about some of the names that you featured through the film. Eugene Harris, his family, and Deanna Harris is who you feature in the film. But Eugene Harris was the first black school board member in the city. And there's this great picture of, this all-white board with one guy. And, it was a telling photograph because you just say, wow, how many 7-to-1 decisions were there?
Absolutely. It was just such a different time. And I think for my students, that was something that we really had to continue to remind ourselves. Remember, this was different. It's not like it is today. They're so used to a mixed environment, and it just wasn't that way here in Tulsa and many places across the country.
And you featured prominently a Julius Pegues and Nancy McDonald, who were instrumental in coming up with the solution that made Booker T. And in fact, if it was the Harris family that sort of came up with the idea of saying, well, instead of closing the school and sending all of our kids south, why don't we figure out a way to attract white kids to Booker T. Washington? And the best way to do that is by having one of the best schools in the state.
There were
that must have blown a lot of minds.
Well, I'm sure it did. And there were a lot of people that were kind of coming to the same conclusion. Mrs. McDonald was very instrumental in an elementary school, Burroughs Little School, and then even Carver, which is a middle school that feeds into Booker T. to this day. But Carver had been closed. So there was a lot on the line as they began to problem solve about Booker T. Washington, because they knew it was at stake. This could happen, and it would have been so tragic had it happened to lose this jewel of our city.
Yeah. In fact, the court order said 60-40, and actually in the case of Washington, people came to the idea that it should be 50-50.
That's correct.
And that was very important.
It was very important, and I think H.J. Green, who was also in the film, he was the principal at Hale High School who exchanged principalships with the Booker T. principal in that first year of the integration. He talks about how that was such a key differentiator in the Booker T. Washington case that was different from what was originally proposed and very different from what was happening across the country.
That was one of the most interesting things, I think, in the film was the fact that as a way to make this work, these two principals said, okay, we'll change jobs.
It's unfathomable in some ways.
Well,
today who cares?
Yeah, you know, but it was the idea.
But back then, yeah, it had never been. And
yeah, a white principal coming to this school to oversee desegregation.
Mm-hmm. And the grace that was extended by the whole Booker T. community, because I think change is hard. Yet when you're forced into a situation, you know, I'm sure there were a lot of areas where perhaps people weren't getting things the way they wanted, and there was a lot of room for pushback. But it just seems that as time went by, it wasn't without bumps, but it did work. It did happen.
Nancy McDonald mentions in the film that she says at one point she was very concerned that they were not going to make the quota of white students.
They had one student sign up under the first wave of how they were going about doing it, and they knew we got to do something different. And that's when they began to meet with individual families or small groups of families to try and recruit them, to assure them that it was going to be great and this is what we're doing and it is new. And it is a risk, but worth taking the risk.
My guest today is Andrea Jobe, a filmmaker. She's made several films over the years, and her most recent film is a documentary on Booker T. Washington High School, which celebrated its 100th anniversary last year. The premiere is taking place this evening at the Circle Cinema. Events get underway at 6 o'clock. The film shows at 6:30. And I guess the plan is to take this on the film festival circuit. I mean, it's really come out very well. It tells a good story. It tells a good social history as well as how the school has played a role in the social history. It's not just been a school. It's been more of a focal point for a community, especially as that community suffers through the race riot, suffers through urban renewal, and a highway going right through the middle of the heart of the business district in Greenwood.
Well, and it even comes into today and well, what's going on right now in education in Oklahoma and the way that we're seeing funding be distributed in other places rather than education. And a school like Booker T, not being a private school, provides this stellar education for all students. And yet they still have budgets that they have to meet or they have to start cutting. And it would be such a shame for a school that International Baccalaureate is a program they have there, started in 1984, which was way early in the, quote, International Baccalaureate game in the United States. And it's an amazing program, but, you know, the teachers must get training and there's tests that have to be given. And once they get that diploma, it's good all over the world, that International Baccalaureate diploma. In a public school, this is just what's so unusual about it. So as Booker T is kind of now leading this charge, being the central focus in this new landscape of education and plummeting funding. So hopefully we can watch them push through this just as they have done through those early obstacles as well.
Yeah, and what's really amazing to me is some of the teachers there. And some of the teachers, you know, don't have the long familial connection to it. I'm thinking of John Waldron, and these teachers, they know the history, and You know, some of them are 2, 3, 4 generations now of teachers who have been a part of this school, either attending or in some way working at the school. That was had to be a really interesting part of the story.
You know, at first I was struck by those 4 generation families, like, that's really, you know, great. But it's more than just, I want to go to the high school where my mother, grandmother, great-grandmother. It's deeper than that, because there's a sense there of you, well, it's all the things E.W. Woods talked about. You know, you can achieve your dreams. You are worth your education. You get in there, and they do that for all students. So when we had a screening at Carver, we had an early screening there, I had a woman come up to me and say, we've got 4 generations that have gone through Booker T, and I saw one of my, you know, relatives on the screen up there. She was so excited. And for her, it wasn't just, oh, we have a great football team all the time. It wasn't that. It was that ability to hand down these ideals and this community connection to their education. And it rubs off on you. I got a picture with her. I said, would you take a picture with me? It's been fantastic. But yeah. I do have one funny story. I have all these yearbooks that I've been working with, and that's where all the photographs are from, which I felt was this unique set of circumstances as a filmmaker to say, okay, you're limited to what high school yearbook staffs took pictures of. And so it was like, all right, let's see what we have. And as I would look through year after year, I would, of course, begin to see these families, you know, the names year after year. And I wonder, okay, they're probably a cousin. And I was at a Carver Middle School play and saw a last name in the program. My nephew was in that. And I was like, oh, I wonder if their father is either so-and-so or so-and-so or their grandfather. I could trace them all the way back just because these names, you know, it's powerful when a family has that kind of history around them. And oftentimes in the United States, our history is a little ethereal. We know we came from somewhere, but it was truly so humbling for me to be able to dig through all this information and see year after year after year, a styles changed and attitudes changed, but this thread of a family going through all these 100 years.
What were some of the other sources you used for the photographs? Because I know some came from, obviously, the Historical Society. There was a great shot at the very beginning where it was obviously a panorama shot or something maybe you cobbled together. It was this wonderful, it looked like a photograph from a pinhole camera. So it had a 270-degree angle and the way you used it was the sort of Ken Burns technique of, you know, taking the still photograph and just panning the camera across
the
this long
yes.
panorama. Where did that photo go?
That
from?
One is, I believe, from the Beryl Ford collection.
Yeah.
Again, we used a lot of, there are some historical photos also
sure.
from, you know, different places. I used a library in Michigan and another one in, I believe, Iowa. Just different people have those kind of national shots. But for the local shots, they're all from either the yearbook or from the Beryl Ford collection or I have the list somewhere, but local sources.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many pieces of this around. It was wonderful to be able to pull some of them together so that you could have these yearbook photos and even the historical footage, the film footage that I was able to locate. That added so much to the film because it's actual footage of Tulsa in the 1920s, and it's pristine. It's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, and of course, you know, the athletics and the band and the hijinks, these were all big, important. They're perhaps even more, I mean, it's important in every high school, but in this particular high school, it was even more important, I think, because it was because of the inherent inequality of the school in during the days of segregation. It was a way of saying, yes, we're just as good as anybody else.
Yes.
And maybe better.
Yes. Yes.
And I think it was interesting that you did focus on that as one of the themes in the film. Was that something you took away?
When I looked at the school, it was, what are the expressions that they have for this, what I termed the E.W. Woods DNA? And sports was absolutely one of those pieces. And, of course, sports is absolutely a high school expression, but fine arts and academics, those were the three pillars that not only that the early teachers talked about, but that they talk about today. So I felt like that was a way to demonstrate what it is we're talking about instead of, a lot of them, which they say, oh, it's a Hornet thing. That's their favorite thing to say. I was like, okay, well, that's not going to be good enough. We've got to show what that means.
No, but what I really enjoyed was seeing the passion of Julius Pagese talking, is he sitting in the hallway of the old part of the school and saying, here's my class here, here's this class here. It's just this love.
That was one of my favorite interviews. And the stories that he told, they were so fantastic. And he was in the zone. You're right. When someone says, that's where I went to biology and this is where the typewriters were, it was wonderful. In fact, we even have him sitting in one of the older chairs. It creaked a lot throughout the interview, but it seemed right. And I think that was the longest interview. We could have talked for days. He just has such a wealth of knowledge. And all the people that I interviewed, I just so appreciated their time. And they were just talking. It was just a conversation.
Now, what was the reaction from the community? You've obviously shown it to a few stakeholders at this point, and people, you mentioned the screening at Carver. What's been the reaction from that community that sustained this school and has been fiercely protective of it over the years?
I have only felt open arms, and I chose to tell the story through this, almost curate the story, really, through the others telling the story, not to have a narrator. And that can be tricky because everyone has their own perspective.
Yeah, different memories too.
Different memories.
Memories change over
years. But that oral history is just so dynamic and it's so emotional. And I wanted to capitalize on that as much as possible. I remember an early screening, I had invited Mrs. McDonald and Mr. Mims, who's a vice principal, to my edit suite. And I was so nervous because they were there. They were the people. They were the ones. And so I couldn't even be in the room with them when they watched it. I don't know. But I came in afterwards and their response, Mr. Mims, who has become such a dear friend, he had tears in his eyes. And Nancy, they just looked at me and they just were overwhelmed. And that to me was like a breath. I could relax. Okay. We screened it for the principals or mm-hmm. the staff, administrative staff. And it was so funny because one of the administrative people over there said, I kind of thought it was going to be a slideshow. Because, you don't know your history maybe, or she just didn't know. And then Mr. Furch was quiet for a while, which, of course, as a filmmaker always makes you
nervous,
but happy, like they're thinking about it, hopefully. But he's the one that said, this is an American story.
All right. The name of the film is Freedom School. Andrea Jobe, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Documentary filmmaker Andrea Jobe speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Her 45-minute documentary on Booker T. Washington High School is titled Freedom School. The film receives its official premiere this evening with a fundraising event for the school at the Circle Cinema. Events get underway at 6 o'clock with a showing of the film set for 6:30. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, you can listen online on demand at any time at publicradiotulsa.org. Just look for Studio Tulsa. You can look at our most recent episodes and search our archives. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.